everyone, and welcome back to the San Juan Snowcast. I'm your host, Chris. Today is Wednesday, December 29th, 2021, and this is episode 11. Well, folks, welcome to the Snowcast COVID edition. If you can't already tell by the sound of my voice, yep, I got the Omicron. And for the last 8 days, I've been sitting indoors feeling absolutely terrible. They say symptoms are milder with Omicron, but man, I got wrecked. And as of this recording, I'm still sick, and it doesn't seem like I'm going to be getting into the backcountry anytime soon. Man, that sad trombone is coming in way too handy these days. I came very close to not even recording an episode this week, but COVID be damned. I mean, after all, it's been dumping snow. We're in the midst of one of the biggest storms of our season, aka the December to Remember, the Christmas cloudburst, the holiday hullabaloo, the Yuletide slammer, and the biggest and baddest blizzard we've been battered with since the spring of 2019. So, what does all this mean for our snowpack? Well, it's getting deep out there, but our mountains have also been getting hammered by southwest winds, and as a result, our avalanche danger has been high basically every day since December 24th. So, this is an exciting time for snow lovers, but an incredibly dangerous time to be out in the backcountry. On this week's show, we're going to recap all the epic weather we've been getting, take a look at the state of the snowpack, discuss our first avalanche fatality in Colorado of the season, and try to help you better understand what the forecast means when it says high danger. I'm also going to shout out some upcoming community events and look ahead to what we can expect for backcountry conditions going into 2022. Well, this is the last show of the year, so write down those resolutions and then just stay home on New Year's Eve. Because trust me, you really don't want what I've got. And because the snowcast starts now. All right, let's kick things off with a look at last week's weather and a snowpack update. Well, this storm has really lived up to the hype. Since December 24th, we've been getting clobbered here in the Wands, with new snow falling from the sky for 5 of the last 6 days. And it's not just happening here. California has been completely buried, with record-setting dumps, power outages, and closed highways. Here in our neck of the woods, it all started on the night of the 23rd, when a warm and wet storm system, courtesy of that atmospheric river, rolled in and we got 10 to 20 inches of wet, dense snow across the Wands. Now, this was an unusual system because this storm actually began as rain in Telluride. Yes, rain on Christmas Eve in Colorado. All right. No more of that. But eventually temperatures cooled and the snow line dropped. But I want to underscore that the snow that fell on 1224 was unusual, and it created a very thick and supportive slab across much of the southern half of the San Juans. Saturday, the 25th, there was a lull in the action, with dry weather and some sunshine even. But then on Sunday, the storm rolled back in, with winds blasting out of the southwest and visibility going to hell. Here at my house in Blofer, the winds raged so hard that they took down a tree, which took down our power, and created such massive drifts on the road out of town that the county plow drivers just gave up and left us snowed in for about 12 hours. I guess that's mountain living for ya. Sunday's pulse dropped another 6 to 8 inches across the Wands, and then another pulse on Monday night brought another 6 to 8 inches. That snow continued through Tuesday, with a few pulses of heavy snow moving through the region, and here on Wednesday morning, we've got another 4 to 8 inches across the zone, and the southwest winds have finally begun to ease off just a little bit. The last 3 days of storms didn't quite produce as much snow as was forecast in the models, but hey, all this incremental loading is great for building up the pack, and we will take it. Oh, one caveat here. There are two areas in the San Juans that have continuously been getting the most snow out of these storms. Can you guess? Well, the number one area for highest total accumulations is... yep, you guessed it, Wolf Creek, with an impressive 65 inches in the last 6 days. The runner-up, Colbank Pass. And while there's no weather station up there to know exact totals, I've gotten reports from folks who've gotten out in the backcountry there, and they said it's deep. Real deep. Now, looking ahead, we'll continue to see patchy showers and cold and cloudy weather through the rest of Wednesday and into Thursday. Then, on Friday, the storm intensity picks up again, with Friday and Friday night bringing heavy snow to most elevations across the Wands. Again, with this new storm, the southern San Juans are favored to get the most out of this pulse, with Wolf Creek sitting, once again, squarely in the bullseye of the storm. But this is definitely an equal opportunity storm for the whole state, with everybody getting some of the action and at least 10 inches by the end of the weekend. Here in the Juans, we're looking at another 10 to 30 inches by Monday morning. This is a storm system I won't soon forget, and I just want to take a moment to celebrate the fact that it's happening. So, with that,
extra funky funk break!
Since the last show, we've had our first avalanche death of the season here in Colorado. It happened on Christmas Eve up near Cameron Pass when a skier popped out of the trees into a below tree-lined scree field and triggered a slab avalanche that broke on a 38-degree convexity at the top of that slope. The fracture broke in the old faceted snow near the ground, and sadly, despite being recovered by his partner, the skier who was caught and buried did not survive. Closer to home, we've had a couple close calls, with a full burial happening on Saturday here in the backcountry south of Telluride, and some skiers getting caught and carried in a smaller slide over on Red Mountain Pass on Monday. I recently got the chance to sit down and chat with one of the folks that was involved in that Christmas Day avalanche, and they had some interesting takeaways regarding the snowpack that day. As they were heading up to the top of their line, they didn't get many of the normal red flags that we associate with a persistent slab avalanche problem. Other than one woomph they heard way down below in the flats before they even began ascending, they didn't observe any cracking or collapsing. And they were breaking trail through deep snow and were definitely off the old skin track, but again, things were pretty quiet for them. Now my theory here, and this is one that I've heard repeated by the guys at Crested Butte Avalanche Center as well as the CAIC, is that the snow that fell on 1224 was warm and wet, and it bonded pretty well to the old snow surface. While it's been tough to get many observations because not many people are out there recreating during these high danger days, which is good, we didn't see a super large avalanche cycle happen after the 24th. This warm, wet snow created a slab that is dense and supportive, and in some places, it's effectively bridging over those weak layers. That's why those guys didn't observe a lot of cracking or collapsing. The problem is, when you find that not-so-sweet spot where the slab is thinner or less cohesive, then bam, pop goes the avalanche. So when these guys skied close enough to a convex rollover, suddenly the slab collapsed on basal facets near the ground and ran down the slope, catching and burying one of them who waited down below. The individual I talked to said he estimated the crown to be 3 to 5 feet in places, and the whole snowpack went, leaving a bed surface of only 20 to 30 centimeters of depth ore, which they rode down on to begin the rescue. So what does this all mean? Well, remember back in early December when I told you that you could basically save your ass just by skiing on the grass? That was a simpler time with a simpler snowpack. And we were getting tons of feedback whenever we traveled on aspects where that persistent weak layer was present. But now, things ain't so simple. We're now dealing with a snowpack with multiple slab over weak layer setups, and we're not going to be lucky enough to get such obvious feedback. Now, our uncertainty is much higher, both in terms of the likelihood of triggering these weak layers and the distribution of this thick, supportive 1224 slab. Bottom line, it's time to step way back. Once these storms clear, the skies are going to go blue, and people are going to get after it. And I'm going to paraphrase the message that the Utah Avalanche Center is currently shouting as loud as it can. The conditions are ripe for a serious accident in the near future. On Monday, the CAIC sent out an email to all the professional operations in Colorado, in response to them hearing about a number of close calls from ski patrols and guide services across the state. Now, this information wasn't shared with the public, but I'm going to share it here. Their message? Well, recently formed slabs are denser and hold more water than typical December slabs. The slabs are thin enough in shallow areas that they remain sensitive to triggering, but in deeper areas, they're thick enough to falsely instill confidence. And these slabs may lure folks farther onto slopes before breaking. Therefore, we need to treat the current conditions with more caution than usual. So, basically, just take it easy out there. I know the pow is deep, and let me tell you, I am frothing probably harder than anybody to go ski it after being stuck indoors for the last 8 days. But hey, there's a long winter ahead, and there will always be more powder days. The last thing that the individual who's involved in Saturday's slide told me was that he realized they just let their guard down, and they let the lack of obvious instability give them a false sense of confidence. So, I know it's hard to practice self-restraint, but hey, nobody said skiing an avalanche terrain was going to be easy. Community calendar. All right, team, we've got some exciting things coming down the pipe locally. First, Friends of the San Juans just announced that they're offering an avalanche rescue clinic with Leo Lloyd. That will be happening on Molas Pass on February 5th. Registration for that opens this Sunday, January 2nd at 5 a.m., so sign up. Here in Telluride, our next backcountry chat is going down on Thursday, January 27th at the Wilkerson Public Library, and it's going to feature local Ryan Howe. He'll be talking about what he's observed as an examiner for Pro 1 avalanche rescue drills and the ways in which we can be better at rescuing someone from under the snow. And over at Purgatory, the Know the Snow Fund is hosting a Ski-Mo race on January 9th to raise funds for their Avalanche Education Scholarship Fund. There's an 8-mile course and a 5-mile course, and entry fees go to helping them provide scholarships to folks who need avalanche education here in the San Juans. You can sign up for that race by visiting knowthesnowfund.org. And lastly, following up on something I teased in an earlier episode, the CAIC has finally launched their new Avalanche Explorer tool, which you can find under the Observations tab. It's a great way to analyze the avalanche incidents that have been happening across the state, and it's got a pretty slick interface. It's really a great tool, especially if you're more of a graphics or visual person. Remember that human-triggered avalanches provide some of the best data that we can learn from, so check it out the next time you log on to read the forecast. Okay, and now it's time for your avalanche education nugget of the week. Now, at this year's Four Corner Snow and Avalanche Workshop in Silverton back in October, somebody, and I can't remember who, sorry, but somebody mentioned an awesome analogy for how to think about the risks described by the different avalanche hazard ratings that make up the North American Danger Scale. The Danger Scale describes the avalanche hazard for each day in terms of the likelihood of natural and human-triggered avalanches and the destructive potential of those slides. Now, you see this every day when you log on to the CAIC. It goes from low to moderate to considerable to high to extreme, 5 levels. The hazard ratings also have an associated color, green, yellow, red, etc. Now, the analogy that was presented was to think about the risk associated with each hazard rating in terms of trying to cross a busy highway with a growing number of lanes of traffic. The risk of getting hit by a car grows as the highway gets wider, in the same way that the risk of getting caught in a slide grows as the hazard rating goes up. Now, we've all jaywalked, and I'm just a small town country kid, but I've had my fair share of sprinting across lanes of traffic, and I bet you have too. So come along on this analogy with me. All right, so we're standing on the side of the road, and cars are whizzing by. Now, one way to think about low danger is to equate it to trying to cross 2 lanes of traffic. All right, so here we go. Look both ways. Okay. All right. It's clear. Go, 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 go. Whoa, that was close. Where'd that car even come from? But hey, I guess we made it. The take-home point is that low danger doesn't mean no danger. And even on a low danger day, you could still trigger an avalanche. Just like you could also get hit by a car crossing a busy 2-lane highway. But as the hazard rating goes up each step, from low to moderate to considerable, the risk we're exposed to essentially doubles. Alright, so now it's a moderate day, and we're staring down 4 lanes of traffic, 2 lanes going both ways. Alright, this is getting a little more tricky. Alright, but if we time it just right, I think if we sprint across. Oh, sweet! Alright, we made it. Now we go to considerable, and 8 lanes of traffic. Yikes, this is getting a little sketchy. I mean, should we even try for it? Man, I hope we can hang out in the median to catch our breath or something. Okay, here we go, here we go. Dang! We didn't make it. On a considerable day, natural avalanches are possible, and human-triggered avalanches are likely. Now imagine a high-danger day, as a 16-lane highway. An extreme danger? Damn, would you try crossing 32 lanes? No way. My point is that we sometimes just see colors when we look at the danger scale. Green must mean go, I guess. Yellow, okay, that's like slow down, look both ways. But man, there's no orange stoplights, so does that mean proceed with caution? The next time you go out on a high Avi danger day, and your plan involves touring into avalanche terrain, just close your eyes and imagine trying to cross 16 lanes of busy traffic. Is that a risk you're willing to take? Maybe not. Now remember, there are totally places you can go on a high avalanche danger day where you can frolic in pow-filled meadows and not stress about getting buried in a slide. But you must not be in avalanche terrain, meaning the slope angles have to be lower than 30 degrees, and you want to be darn sure you're not in the runout of any avalanche paths. Well, thanks for coming along on that journey with me. I hope it was helpful, and if not, at least it was fun for me to make. All right. Well, that's it for this week's show. Thanks as always to you for listening, and thanks to the Budos Band for providing that extra funky funk break. Hey, Budos Band, I love you guys. Please don't sue me. It was only a 10-second clip. Well, you can find me and follow me on Instagram at San Juan Snowcast, and stay tuned for a couple of articles coming out this weekend about the podcast. The show is going to be featured in the Telluride Daily Planet and in the Colorado Sun on Sunday. Thanks to Eva and Stephanie for reaching out to me and writing about the show. Also, I'm thinking of getting some stickers going. You like stickers, right? Who doesn't? So stay tuned for that. And if you want some sticker swag, shoot me an email at sanjuansnowcast@gmail.com. Well, until next time, stay safe out there, friends, and think snow!